Kunstradio. Radio Kunst.
Two Questions of Moral Value, another inconsequential regurgitated monologue written by Garrett Phelan for At What Point Will Common Sense Prevail? A new work by Garrett Phelan. People, John, Peter, Nigel, Fred. Start. John. Questions of moral value can be decided definitively by facts. There are rights and there are wrongs. Keeping things simple is the best approach. Accusations are pointless without proof and fact. The rest is hypothesis. Depending on the subject, hypothesis regarding crime can be dangerous. Most news revolves around reporting crimes and injustices. Where are the facts? In fact, no accusations about the subject that anyone is discussing around is founded on fact. It's merely speculation and opinion-based, and suspicion on media. Peter, quite right. How about we start with the Catholic Church's stance on the morality, or lack thereof, of IVF treatment? Ranks up there with contraception. John, the Catholic Church and morality on any subject is an easy target for the most redundant of on an intellectual level, least of all IVF treatment, or genetic development, etc. What's interesting about the followers of any religion, I think, is the perception of fate in their theologies and how ready they are to follow any teachings. I wonder, do they consider, outside their own blind fate, the happiness of a couple on having a child through IVF, the life of a child, the contribution of a child to society? I wonder, are there any priests today in the Catholic Church, or student priests, who were conceived via IVF? Now there's a question. Nigel, all religions have for and against arguments, but that gives no one the right to attach the belief to belief. IVF can have its own moral question without the need for religion becoming a target. John, with respect to Catholicism and against arguments, are usually talking to a child of an IVF birth process may be a determining factor. The issue is with science and man's nature. Our nature is to develop. We do this, we learn. We discover we can help someone, we help them. And we create happiness. Science, for once, does something positive. Is this subject worth discussing? Or is it a no-brainer? Is it a distraction today? Or does it drag nuts and addicts away from a good philosophical rant? Fred, fair question. But would we have a maddy conversation if we all thought that? Peter, it isn't a case of religion becoming a target. While I believe that all religion is completely pointless, the right to belief is everyone's. It's the hypocrisy I dislike. The McCanns claim they are moral, highly devout Catholics, worthy of meeting an infallible pontiff. Should they not accept then that it was the divine will of God that they don't have children? Perhaps the word of a deity counts for nothing when it conflicts with what they want. The same seems to be the same for their children. Wants above needs. Perhaps for once, their deity was right. John. That is, in my opinion, an extraordinary opinion. I acknowledge your point of view, but have difficulty in finding out how you have got to such a diverse point of view in what started out as a missing child case. I'm willing to discuss it with you. I believe it was a mid-1800s pontiff that you were basing your statement on. I have no doubt, as with all the laws of the world, it too will be made redundant by future pontiffs in times to come. And supporters who were rampantly against such laws will be ardently for them. That will be produced on the death of Benedict XVI. If laws are to be followed blindly, one must be open to the possibilities that they may change and that new laws must be followed with similar commitment. There is a conversation. But what I feel is at the centre of the thinking is the strange obsession with speculation without facts and my righteous moral predictions. The subject for me is most interesting and worth a good debate over. How we apply ourselves intellectually to the moral question and implicate reportage without honestly questioning how we arrived at our moral position and really giving our moral viewpoint a rigorous interrogation before we subject them to others. Fred, your four first words says it all. John, the conversation is speculation and obsession. Fred, that is what conversations are for. We have no proof, just ideas. John, so avoid the speculations and discuss the process of what you are actually doing. Divert the moral projections you are subjecting others to onto yourself and see if it is a valid process. Is it easier to project our moral views on others rather than to apply them to ourselves? Peter, I think you are correct in what was an 18th Pope who made the declaration. Although, can the world of a Pope be revoked that easily? There are, in the eyes of the Church, infallible. To quote a Catholic site which sums up Catholic contemplation on the issue of IVF, in 1990, the sub summarizes its position. Life is God's gift, and we do not have a right to children. So although I believe that God wants to bless you with children, it is not something that I can support you pursuing if you pursue it at any cost. There are some interesting points raised on www.catholic.org.uk/c129.htm. I happen to agree with your opinion. It's extraordinary. It is, in my opinion. Personally, I think IVF is a wonderful advancement of scientific medical benefit. It's more the hypocrisy I don't understand. That a devout couple could choose an option that the Catholic Church is so opposed to. It's akin to using contraception as a Catholic, a Muslim eating a pork sandwich, or for the sake of injecting a little humour in the conversation, George Bush voting Democrat. Although the concept of DWB actually being capable of putting an X in a box is much more far-fetched than anything else I've said. John, is it hypocritical to a pontiff in the Vatican to, by declaration, say contraception is evil, sentence a continent to death by AIDS, although two of the commandments state, love thy neighbour as thyself, and thou shalt not kill? Not sure if it can be revoked, but reform can happen, as it did in the 50s and 60s. I don't think it's following the hypocrisy of leaders to the end. It could be how these people perceive their own understanding of their religion. Therefore, we are in one of the most problematic areas, which is the area of language and understanding. I might use and understand devout in a different way than you. Gay Catholic priests may view themselves as devout, but under a cardinal pink flag. I don't mean to be rudimentary here. I believe devout and fundamental are two different things. Some devotees go to church every morning. Some fundamentalist thinkers follow the laws to the end. So it's my proposition that it's language of speculation. Yet most of us create these objections, our note of support, without really considering the consequences and effects our projections have on the parties that are implicated. Is that fair? Speculation and reportage in the 21st century involves rich cynics becoming wealthier, and by succumbing to it and energizing it, by creating these speculative populist conversations, we prolong the negative decline. Conversations of value are good. This kind of one might be bad. If we stopped and examined ourselves in the process and examined the process thoroughly, we would stop and spend our time more socially constructively. There is no conspiracy there. There is no conspiracy, there is just ideas in our heads. By functioning within these areas of mental speculation, are we contributing a perpetual social neurosis? We need to look at what initiates that neurosis. Are we continuing a social neurosis in this kind of conversation? Peter, it's a fair point, and one of the main reasons I find myself at odds with organized religion and fundamentalist elements behind it has been the cause of more trouble in the world than anything on earth. The truly devout, while I am in disagreement with their fate, is at least usually true to the idea of their holy texts. Fundamentalism is wholly a different ballgame, one which I could debate for hours. the Christian attitude towards gay people is, for the larger part, quite positive in these more enlightened times. It's the fundamental elements that hold these elements back in the dark times. The likes of Fred Phlebs, Jerry Falwell, Jimmy Swaggart et al. Give religion a very darkened name. While I don't go so far as calling myself a Christian atheist, I'm probably not too far off. I consider myself more morally Christian than the Westboro Baptist Church, and I do believe the moral principles of the Bible hold a good deal of validity. Whereas it is possible to remove all the digestic elements of the Bible, it would serve as a pretty decent guide to a decent life. John, if a Man U fan who does not know the names of all the players, a hypocrite, it would serve as a good guide, as would Das Kapital, the Quran, the Tao Te Ching. My point is, to follow something to the absolute bone is fundamental. To be devout at some point may mean that one does not follow something to the bone. It's close but not total. Ratzinger stated clearly that homosexuality was legal, not very loving or charitable. A statement like that incites hate to others, hypocrisy of the highest level within the Catholic Church. This statement is against the fundamental Christian upholding the commandments. I'm sure you will agree. End.
Quindici. Dio non può mentire. Un altro monologo, ripetuto a pappagallo, è rilevante, scritto e interpretato da Garrett Phelan, 2007. Personaggi. John, Harry, Diane, Greg, Calvin, Liam, Joe, Jean, Magnus, Una. Inizio. John. Se Dio non può mentire, ma può fare tutto, non c'è un problema qui? Se la nostra intelligenza è limitata, come potremmo trovare Dio? Dobbiamo dipendere da una fede cieca. E cosa si intende per una fede cieca? Harry. Chi dice che la fede è cieca? John. È un'espressione molto popolare e sono sicuro che anche tu l'hai usata. E hai conosciuto molte persone che l'hai usata quando si mettono nelle mani dell'ignoto, benché desideri non farlo. Significa avere fiducia in qualcosa al di fuori del proprio controllo, malgrado la metafora. Ciò fa senso? Diane. Beh, la scrittura dice che nessuno può andare al figlio a meno che non sia attratto dal padre che lo ha mandato. Se desideri avere delle prove che la parola di Dio è vera, allora la rinascita di Israele come una nazione anticipata dalla Bibbia è, in effetti, una verità attuale che si sta verificando in questo momento. In qualche modo, Dio prende le decisioni anche in questo momento per la loro vita, se non in questa, nella prossima. Fa tacere tutti coloro che disobbediscono, in modo da prestare pietà a tutti. Pace. Harry. La fede è tutto meno che cieca, dato che sappiamo di chi possiamo fidarci. John. Quando dici la vita prossima, intendi la reincarnazione? Mi scuso per aver usato la parola cieca. Cosa intendevo? La parte che tu credi non possa essere spiegata, non ci pensi, semplicemente lo fai. Questa è fede, non è vero? Greg. Se leggi la scrittura in greco, piuttosto che in inglese, e questa non è una cosa contro chi non lo possono fare, vedrai che il sinonimo di fede è fiducia. Quando mettiamo la nostra fiducia in qualcosa o qualcuno, potrebbe essere Dio, Gesù o il vostro vicino di casa che si prende cura del cane quando non siete in città, si tratta sempre di fiducia. Abbiamo fiducia anche se non sappiamo, ma siamo sicuri che l'individuo di cui ci fidiamo merita la nostra fede. Se ci siamo sbagliati, ritorniamo a casa e vediamo che il cane è sparito e la casa è bruciata. Abbiamo sprecato la nostra vita e l'eternità che credevamo di passare con Dio non è una realtà. Ma quella è la natura della fede. Eppure non mi vergogno perché credo nella persona in cui ho avuto fiducia e sono convinto che è in grado di prendersi cura di quanto gli ho affidato per quella giornata. 2 Timoteo 1,12. John. Va bene, ma questo è possibile quando entra in gioco la cecità e quando dico che intendo quello che non vediamo o che chiede provo nel mondo materiale. Affiderò il mio cane al vicino se lo vedo, anche se forse non lo conosco e non ho delle reazioni con lui, ma lo vedo e ho prove della sua esistenza. Non è vero? Ma se anche tu hai ragione, devo affidargli il mio cane in buona fede e questa è una cosa che ci fa paura. Ma lasciare il mio cane legato al portico di una casa quando non c'è alcun segno di vita nella casa e non posso vedere il vicino e riporre la mia fiducia in lui, potrebbe andar bene per qualcuno, e non intendo discutere su questo aspetto, ma fidarmi in questa situazione è una cosa su cui devo interrogarmi. Cioè, ho fiducia in quanto non si vede e non può essere provato. Nel passato ciò è stato considerato come una fede cieca o speranza per il meglio, non è vero? Quindi, quando cerchiamo Dio, dobbiamo veramente dipendere da questo processo, oppure mi sbaglio? Calvin. Dio non può fare quanto sia logicamente impossibile. È un essere logico ed è per questo che possiamo capirlo in modo teologico. Dio non è limitato da leggi fisiche. Questa è la ragione per cui non possiamo capirlo in un modo teoscientifico, benché purtroppo alcuni cerchino di farlo. Ma il fatto è che la Bibbia spiega anche che Dio non può fare tutto. Per esempio, in Tito 1:2, nella speranza di una vita eterna, che Dio, che non può mentire, ci ha promesso molto tempo fa. Inoltre, non può fare sì che un quadrato diventi un cerchio. Calvin. Più o meno questo riassume tutto. La fede cieca non è un concetto biblico. Liam. No. Dio non può mentire, non perché non è in grado di farlo, ma perché non desidera farlo. Joe. Limitato in opposizione al limitato, però. Ma in entrambi i casi noi non possiamo trovare Dio, dato che si rivela lui stesso. Si tratta della fede di qualcun altro, in opposizione alla nostra fede, che non è cieca. A proposito, se Dio può fare tutto, potrebbe far sì che un triangolo abbia 5 lati? Correre più forte di se stesso? Essere dappertutto e da nessuna parte allo stesso tempo? Dividere lo 0? Un cavolfiore? John. Questo è molto interessante per me. E spero che continuerà in questa vena, per quanto riguarda la parte teo della teologia. Cosa significa e che cos'è il sottofondo? Inoltre, se Dio non può fare quanto logicamente possibile, perché i fedeli lo pregano di aiutarli su questioni che sono logicamente impossibili? In effetti non è logico e Dio non è un'entità. Quindi, se consideriamo Dio una creatura, non siamo colpevoli di una bestemmia. Se fosse una creatura logica, sarebbe limitata dalle leggi fisiche. Ma, come dici tu, non lo è. Quindi va oltre le leggi fisiche. Viene detta una scrittura della Bibbia che può fare tutto? Jean, quando una persona dice che la fede è cieca, intende dichiarare che non ha fede e che non comprende il fatto. Giovanni 9,39, nuova versione internazionale. E Gesù disse: sono venuto in questo mondo per giudicare, in modo che i ciechi potranno vedere e quelli che vedono diventeranno ciechi. Coloro che usano l'espressione fede cieca non possiedono la fede creata da Dio per sapere cosa sia in realtà la fede. Per fede si intende la possibilità di vedere nella potenza della grazia quello che l'occhio naturale non può vedere. È una cosa molto reale. Ma coloro che non credono, semplicemente non possono vederlo in quel modo. Però c'è una fede cieca, per esempio i seguaci di Hitler, e coloro che votano per politici che potrebbero essere disastrosi per la nazione. Una fede cieca e muta, persona a cui facile mentire, e seguiranno il leader in modo assoluto. Ma quella non è la fede che ci concede il Signore. Salmo 19,7, nuova versione internazionale. La legge del Signore è perfetta, dato che dà di nuovo vita all'anima. Gli statuti del Signore sono meritevoli di fiducia perché rendono saggio il semplice. La fede ci permette di vedere che quelli che non credono sono anche ciechi. Salmo 119, 98-100, nuova versione internazionale. I tuoi comandamenti mi rendono più saggio dei miei nemici, dato che sono sempre con me. John, se Dio non può mentire, eppure può fare tutto, non c'è un problema qui? Magnus, un punto interessante. Ma la menzogna è una cosa reale, oppure è semplicemente un modo di descrivere l'assenza di qualcosa? John, sì, hai ragione. Allora permettimi di cambiare l'espressione, perché altrimenti sarà sempre un problema per quanto riguarda la mia esperienza di Dio tramite il cristianesimo, dato che è il potere più alto vicino a me. Per quanto riguarda il fatto che Dio non può far niente di sbagliato, si deve anche accettare che Dio può fare tutto, quindi può anche fare qualcosa di sbagliato. Magnus. Ma il fatto di sbagliare rappresenta un'assenza. La nostra prima premessa è che può fare tutto, e tutto è sempre qualcosa, mai niente. John. Beh, a mia opinione, nel tutto è incluso anche il niente. Abbiamo di nuovo un problema con la lingua. Partendo dalla base, le persone che non credono in Dio credono in qualcosa che potrebbe essere niente o tutto, e che in effetti si sostituisce a un Dio come descritto dai cristiani. Diventa il loro Dio, per quanto riguarda la loro percezione e conoscenza. Magnus. È vero, ma da quanto so della teologia cristiana, anche il Dio della Bibbia è comprensibile, ma è buono. Questa è la ragione per cui ha fatto qualcosa, perché va contro la sua natura a far niente. Qualcosa è l'espressione della bontà, mentre niente della malvagità. Insistere che Dio può essere niente è ugualmente malvagio e contraddittorio sul modo in cui la teologia cristiana lo intende. Ricordati, se una regola fondamentale è che non puoi mai capire o contenere Dio, e che se potresti farlo, allora non si tratterebbe più di Dio, ma soltanto di un modo di riassumerlo. Patetico e privo di carattere. Oppure un tentativo di porre limiti alla sua infinità. Mannaggia, anche il dover assegnare un sesso a qualcosa che è puro spirito rappresenta semplicemente un tentativo patetico dell'uomo per cercare di capirlo. Ci sono cascato un'altra volta. Una. È troppo impegnato a costruire una roccia a crivare per preoccuparsi di mentire. Magnus. Sono d'accordo, quel problema è ancora confuso, ma in realtà non sono in grado di dimostrare la falsità in questo contesto. Un dollaro è più di niente. Niente è più grande di un dio, ergo un dollaro è più grande di Dio. Che buffo, così confuso e divertente allo stesso tempo. Ma una. Ucci probabilmente ha avuto la risposta migliore a questo tipo di dilemma un po' di tempo fa. Perché Dio vorrebbe far ciò? Di sicuro potrebbe costruire una montagna grande quanto l'universo, e quindi che non si può sollevare perché non c'è niente su cui poterla sollevare. Ma cosa potrebbe ottenere con ciò? In particolare, poiché tutto quello che dovrebbe fare è rendere l'universo leggermente più grande, e allora potrebbe sollevarla. Ugualmente, credo che Dio potrebbe mentire. Ma perché vorrebbe farlo? La possibilità di farlo non deve essere confusa con la mancanza di farlo. Fine.
Seventeen Youth Isn't a Defense, another inconsequential regurgitation monologue written and performed by Gareth Veen in 2007. People: Darren, Sid, Caroline, Martha, Vivian, Eddie, Darren, Maureen, Michael, Peter, Bob. Start. Darren. Youth isn't a defense for not knowing the difference between right and wrong, is it? Just because a kid is 15 and he killed someone, or because he drove a car and went out of control, doesn't mean he can get off, does it? Or a kid doing cocaine and gets caught and gets off because he's a minor. Is that not nuts? Peter. Where I am, a few have been tried as an adult for murder as young as age 14. If the judge decides that they had adult knowledge that what they did was wrong. Where I am, they have been sent to prison for 40 years or something like that, under age 18. Only difference is until age 21 to 23 they go to the kiddie prison. Later, they are transferred to the adult facility. Bob. I believe in some circumstances it is. What is youth? How young is youth? Darren. Right, let's create the line in legal terms in the context of where we are. But please not let this put anyone off. Legal terms in Ireland are 18, I believe. You cannot be convicted of any crime if you are under 9. So anything under 18 is youth in this conversation's context. So 14-year-old children who are convicted of murder and are now serving full sentences. This was different to the Bulger case in the UK. It is the extreme of the debate I am raising, as would be the case of young men who did the Columbine shootings. But what are the criteria for right and wrong? And why do we allow judgments sometimes not passed on to people underage, using their age as an excuse? Is an 18 morals and values different to that than a 17-year-old's, and why? Bob. 16 years old can go to prison here. The criteria for right and wrong is the law. is an 18-year-old morals and values different to that of a different than a 17-year-old's? No, they are not. However, it does depend on the individual, and this is what the courts take into account when sentencing. Peter: makes sense, Bob. Now that I find the ultimate oxymoron is getting off from murder charge by reason of insanity. Like, one would have to be somewhat crazy and not in the right mind to murder someone in the first place. Michael: now that is how I always saw it, Peter. Because basically it's, as you say, somebody giving in to their primitive urge to murder, something that will have crossed all our minds more than once in our lives, especially when we see a terrible injustice being done. That's not to say you need to be insane to murder somebody. Killing to some people is like swatting a fly. Peter: I've heard that once you bump someone off, doing it again is easy. I don't even agree with the death penalty, just because what if they are innocent and by the facts presented we just can't tell. It does make sense to die for killing someone, but who are we to play God? I know in Japan, where I did live, the sentence for killing someone is still the gallows, no kidding. Michael: if you take soldiers in a war zone, technically speaking, they're not committing murder when they kill the enemy. And okay, however, it's how the enemy is defined that raises the moral issue. Vietnam is a perfect example, where the GIs couldn't tell who was friend or enemy. We all saw the Nam movies, but that did not excuse the nut element of us army who shot anything that moved, and it is the same in any war, conflict, and all armies. Darren: based on what, though? How can they determine in court what the evidence of the crime? Murder is the extreme. What about all the other defence cases where young people are brought before the court and let off due to their age? Is youth a defence for standing by when you know something bad is happening? Peter: did I read that the defence and prosecution present arguments for and against, and here the grand jury or a judge decides if the person is tried as an adult? Michael: the hoodie phenomenon has taken over large parts of Britain, where groups of young men, mainly teens, go out and for no logical reason attack and murder innocent defenceless people, sometimes within yards from their homes. This is when age should be put to one side in whatever sentence they get, which in my opinion should be life. Maureen: okay, where's family values? And where's parenting? Monkey see, monkey do. And if you leave a kid to raise itself, can it be blamed if it fecks up? Do I sound like a parrot? It's been my war cry for years. Darren: so you're saying blame the parents for bringing up their kids badly. So all the kids here, the courts and kids in court today, their parents are to blame. Maybe their parents should do the time. Maureen: maybe I am saying that a lot of kids are brought up by parents who haven't a clue, don't want to spend the time, give their kids gifts and cash instead of rules, are busy living their own lives and ingesting their drug of choice. And the list goes on. And notice I haven't mentioned broken homes, unwed mothers, because it is an insult to people working their butts off to be lumped in such a category. I've seen many people on their own raise great kids. A lot of these kids are from broken homes, aren't from broken homes. We do, believe it or not, have problems like this too here. We aren't immune, so I see it. Have also worked with social services, so I've seen lots of situations from get-go, and in a lot of cases, unfortunately, it is the parents. Should they do the time? In my estimation, yes. But what I'm fed up of is this unaccountability by everyone. The kid starts with the parents, and the buck should end there. If my kids are setting light to cars and robbing tires, you can be damn sure I know that he's not in his bedroom doing his homework now, is he? It's about time the bleeding hearts got off their arses and stopped moaning and helped organise after-school programmes, activities designed to keep these kids busy. Darren: if you're old enough to steal a car, beat someone up, steal, you're old enough to know it's wrong. And in the main here, we are talking the 12 to 18-year-old. They know they are breaking the rules and doing it anyway. Adults on their own with children are afraid the child accuses them of some sort of abuse. Who has the power? Who sets the boundaries? Where does it begin or end? Where can discipline be introduced and in what form? Kids rule. Maureen: if these kids are raised right, they won't be out stealing cars. They'll be home by the fire doing their homework. This isn't a problem either. As far back as I can remember, the gangs were up and running in housing estates, and experiments took place in one of the states, whereby the parents were accountable to the powers that be for any misdoings of their kids. And guess what? Crime stopped. If you understand that your preteen kid, if he breaks a window, you're going to have to pay personally for it, I'll bet you you'll put a bit of thought into who you allow your kids out with or what you allow them to do. And kids don't suddenly get to be preteen and go wild. The seed is bred in them for years. Darren, so you don't believe that every human has a natural right and wrong differentiation gene? What about all the kids who come from the same homes, same areas, live the same lives, have the same parents, and who don't do it because they know the difference between right and wrong? Difficult for a parent to take, don't you think? Maureen, yes, I believe there will always be the bad apple, but basically I believe all kids are good, start off good, and yes, the parents' kids are like a blank slate in their formative years. Education, good nutrition, and a safe place to sleep are basics that a lot of kids don't have. And why? Because their parents don't provide it. To adopt a kid, look at the hoopla's you have to go through. And I see degenerate after degenerate having kids, neglecting them, and no one gives a damn. Society with this babysitter attitude and bleeding hearts needs to get with the program. Darren, so if there's a bad apple, are the parents responsible? Or are they simply not just bad and dealt with as so? Eddie, my son is 6 and a half and he knows it's wrong to kill, steal, lie, cheat, bully, hate others for being different, tell a woman she looks fat. Harry, is there a difference between knowing what's wrong and being responsible for your own actions? Vivian, younger children may do the wrong thing trying to do the right thing, and they do not appreciate that things can be grey. If my older son sees someone hitting his younger brother, he tells him to stop. If they do not stop, he has to decide to get an adult or hit the perpetrator. If he decides that the time taken to get an adult may result in worse for his brother and hits the perpetrator, causing maybe more injury than he intended, is this right or wrong? This is sticky enough for me to work through, and I'm an adult. A child is in car with an adult. Adult has asthma attack. No mobile, so the child takes the driver's place to get to hospital. I think the only time it can be used as a defence is when there is clear evidence that the child's intent it was for greater good and the decision has an understandable base, even if wrong. Bit grey there, but it is a grey subject. Darren, what about young, under 18 neo-Nazis who join neo-Nazi parties or groups? Or what about a black youth calling a white youth a derogatory term? Are both correct or are both wrong? Where is the correct attitude? Where is the wrong one? How is it defined? Martha, right and wrong are what we're taught by our parents and extended family, if we're lucky, and the society in which we grow up. Most of us grow up with a profound sense of what is right and wrong. However, at a very young age, these two things are very black and white. Stealing is wrong under any circumstances. As we grow up, grey areas appear, and knowing the difference between the two becomes more difficult. Depending on your upbringing, your social group, and your peer group, the age within which these grey areas become easier to understand and make informed decisions is vastly different. I don't think youth in itself is a defence, but it can be a mitigating factor. Caroline, yes, you've got a lot right there, but may I ask what is lawful right and what is society right? There are a lot of acceptable things in society today that are in fact against the law. Most of the chief constables today play the what easy and gives me the right stats option when it comes to law enforcement. If it's PC and it gets results, they go for it. It's far from being a level playing field. End.